You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It is 8:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Tuesday morning, first day of July 2025. Parker Olson's over in Madison Studio A2. Chad Holmes standing by in Wausau. Coming up this hour, we will talk to Dan Schaefer, political editor for Civic Media and founder of the Recombobulation Area, all about the budget deal agreed to late yesterday by Governor Tony Evers and legislative Republicans. We'll look at who got what they wanted, who got half a loaf, who got so much less than half a loaf they're not going to want to support this thing. Will it pass when all is said and done? All of that with Dan Schaefer. Those of you hanging around till 8:50, we will be talking to State Senator Jeff Smith of Eau Claire for his reaction on the budget deal as well. So stick around for all of that. Brittany Merlot is off today. Be listening throughout the course of the day for your local weather updates on your favorite Civic Media station. Coming up later across the Civic Media Radio Network, Matt and Air on Air is next from 9 to 11. I will be joining Jane Matt and Air and Greg Bach coming up at 9:30 this morning. Then there's Todd Alba from 2 to 4, Maggie Dawn from 4 to 6. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel will be the guest co-host, and I suspect they'll be talking about the U.S. Supreme Court and the flood of recent decisions at the end of the Supreme Court's term. And then on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba from 6 to 8 this evening, coming up at 6:30 tonight, Pete will be talking to Sturgeon Spirits Distillery founder Carl Lowenstein. So all that across the Civic Media Radio Network. Reminder, sign up for our newsletters, upnorthnewswi.com, including today's episode, all about cherry picking season. Information on what to know, where to go, and how to enjoy the tart kinds of cherries that grow well in Wisconsin Springs. Again, sign up at upnorthnewswi.com. 8:08 right now, let's check in with Chad Holmes from 98.9 WXCO, and of course Parker Olson standing by in Madison as well. Either one of you into either cherry picking, strawberries, any of the other apples? You do any of the pick your own stuff?
I did
apple picking last year, visiting a daughter in Michigan, and some of these apple orchards, I mean, they clearly have become like recreation areas. They know, bring the whole family. There's all this stuff for the kids to do. There was like food trucks and things like that. So some of them have figured out to turn it into a real business. Whereas the maybe two times that I went berry picking as a kid, I mean, you were a farm worker. That was it. You're all scratched up and dirty at the end of it. And you go, was this really worth it? I don't know, but it's a different thing now and much more enjoyable. Yeah. And you can read about it on the website. All right. Having established that you're not men of the land when it comes to picking and growing fruit like that, let's turn instead to that state budget deal, Chad, which I know we're only just now starting to find out about, but the very fact that there was a deal that was worked out, I have to say I'm a little bit surprised, and I don't know, maybe this is as close to a win-win as they all thought that they could get, and that's not a bad thing.
No, and I've been listening to you. I've been looking at the releases coming out as well this morning, and I was saying in the last hour during our local segments about this is a little different than what we're seeing right now in Washington, because we do have Tony Evers, and I think that without having the governor, then this would have been a disaster of a budget. I think it's fairly obvious what the Republicans were hoping to accomplish here, but again, it just shows how vitally important it is to have at least one of the seats at this table being filled by somebody from the other party other than the Republicans, because comparing what's happening what happened in Madison and what's continuing to happen in Madison to what is going on right now in Washington, D.C. It's only a question of how bad it's going to be in Washington. Like you said earlier, it's like, I thought it was a great line. You said, well, you know, you got Ron Johnson here trying to decide how many orphanages you're going to close down. I mean, I just thought that was a perfect way of putting it, because the discussions in Washington aren't about, you know, trying to moderate it. It's trying to make it even worse. But
right.
And one issue that I kind of discussed as well that is concerning, and I think you probably know it as well as anyone because you've dealt with state budgets, is, you know, the good aspects of having, you know, the universities of Wisconsin getting the bump and having some child care money being put in and the special education and the K-12 and all that stuff. And then, of course, the $1.3 billion in tax cuts, $180 average, as you mentioned, to most of the folks. Let's, for argument's sake, say in a couple of years that the economy slows down because of all the goofiness that is being put down the line in Washington, or for whatever reason, because there's cycles. The first thing that they're going to look at is not eliminating that $180 average tax cut for people. It's about, oh, we got to cut education. We have to cut child care funding. We have to cut here, because now the next time you come back, if you say, hey, we want to go back to the levels that we had before because we have a hole in the budget, no, that's a massive tax increase.
Yeah,
so right? I mean, that's the language of it. Yeah. That's the thing that concerns me, that, hey, things are pretty good, you know, in terms of, because like you said, you had some major problems, you know, putting together a budget, because it was all about where do we cut? Where do we cut? Here is about where do we put the money? We spread it around a little bit. It's not going to be this way forever. And it's like in the future, I you know where the first things are going to look for. Cut, cut, cut.
That's right. And one of them that we have not discussed at all, and Dan Hagen told me about it when we were talking last hour off air from Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander, would be Pell Grants. And the mega bill that came out of the House would cut help to a program that provides financial assistance in the form of Pell Grants for college to 6 million low and middle income students. And so they want to, here's that word, tighten eligibility rules. And it's all, you know, talking about, you know, cutting waste, fraud, and abuse. No, you're just making it that much tougher to have people from, you know, poorer families go to college. Jay Rothman of the Universities of Wisconsin is quoted in Politico as saying that the 13 campuses here have roughly 31,600 Pell Grant recipients, and I know that because I was one back in the day. The House bill would require students to increase their course load from 24 credit hours a year to 30 to be eligible for the maximum amount of the grant. And as Dan Hagen was telling me, he's hearing from a lot of people who, they're not full-time students, but, you know, they're doing the right thing, trying to further their education. But if the Republicans tighten the rules, they're not going to further their education, and they're not going to get the better-paying jobs. And, again, you've got Republicans all the time love about fighting red tape. They sure love tying red tape around people, especially if you're in a lower tax bracket.
You know, one thing that I was actually thinking about when you talk about, again, that, when you hear about, where we're just trying to, you know, tighten up in terms of taking away that fraud and abuse and all that. One thing that I think we can agree on that we have seen over the last 6 months is the fact that the folks that talk constantly about all this waste, fraud, and abuse within the system, whether the federal level, the state level, the local level, they're blowing smoke. I think that one thing we have found, if there was massive waste, fraud, and abuse, they would have been talking about it at the top of the mountain. I think that's actually a positive, that this system is not, I mean, we always make the caveat, hey, well, we're not saying all of it, but boy, it is a minuscule amount within our budget. And I think people should be proud of the fact that in a lot of ways, it shows that the government does work.
Here's the thing about illustrating how empty that phrase is. State Senator Chris Kapinga put out a social media post yesterday saying, in so many words, that he'd be okay if it took months for the state budget to work itself out, because he said there's all this waste and fraud. And somebody before me rightly pointed this out. He was first elected to the legislature in 2010. He's been there 14 years. If he cannot explicitly tell you where this alleged waste, fraud, and abuse is, then he's blowing smoke. He's just you know, using it as a talking point. If you're 14 years into your term, you're still saying, well, there's fraud out there, we just got to find it, you must not be very good at your job.
Let me ask you real fast, because you obviously were in that job.
Yeah.
And obviously that you would look at all these issues that come up in front of you, and you take a look at, you know, budget issues and the like. I guess for those of us who have not been there, what did you find? I mean, in terms of how, I mean, is there something there, or is this completely just politics?
Yeah, I'll tell you this. Remember that my first or second budget was just as the Great Recession was getting started. We were facing a $3 to $6 billion shortfall. And I did express some displeasure in the Democratic caucus saying, hey, guys, we're looking to, it must have been the first budget because the Great Recession hadn't hit yet. And I was saying, guys, we're increasing funding in everything, which, again, makes sense, inflation and all that stuff. But I said, I feel bad that I feel like we should be identifying something here that should not get as much of an increase or maybe even a cut because something's not working right. I didn't specifically say waste, fraud, and abuse, but I was thinking more like inefficiencies. And they said, well, there's good luck because we've tightened budgets so much over the, you know, since the Tommy Thompson era, you know, that is, it's a great talking point, but it's not really there. But I do have this breaking point on the federal budget from overnight. In a rare moment of bipartisanship, senators in Washington have voted unanimously to end unemployment benefits for jobless individuals who were making $1 million or more a year before they were fired. So in other words, people making $1 million or more who were fired were getting unemployment benefits until this vote overnight. So again, much like the Chris Kapinga thing, how is that still a thing? If you're in office and you can't identify these things, you're doing your job wrong, man.
Oh, you're exactly right. I mean, there is a little bit of low-hanging fruit. But again, back to the point, I think you kind of underlined it. And especially here in the state of Wisconsin, you said it, Tommy Thompson probably tightened it up completely. And then any of that blood in the turnip was completely gone through the Walker era. Idea that there's all this waste, fraud, and abuse coming after that, then blame your buddy Scott Walker because he was in charge with his Republican buddies for all those years. So, again, I think that I hope people realize that, it can be unwieldy and gangly, but for the most part, our system is very efficient because, frankly, again, goes to the basic tenet of democracy. If you have good people in enough positions, you're going to be able to do some good things. And I do think that all this pounding on bad government is it's very difficult to fight back against.
It has been that way, prior to Ronald Reagan, but he really turned it into a brand of bashing government that all government is bad. And you're a bad guy or an elite liberal if you say, no, the government is good if you have good people, service-minded people in charge of it. And what I've turned it into instead is the saying I've said a million times, those who hate government most should be trusted least to run it competently. They are not interested in that at all. Chad
real
Holmes
fast,
follows.
Real yep. fast,
Pat. Yep.
Were you talking to Dan Schaefer later? I saw him at the Brewer game on Friday night. What a great guy. I tell you.
He's a great guy. Of course.
He came by just to say hello to me, and it was really nice. So
I will ask him all about that in 15 minutes right after a local update. Thank you, Chad. All right. So like I said, Dan Schaefer in about 15 minutes. A local update is next for some of you here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Again, 30 minutes from now, we will have State Senator Jeff Smith in here to talk about reaction to the budget deal reached late yesterday by Governor Tony Evers and legislative Republicans, and find out his take on whether it will get a good amount of Democratic support and come up for a final vote in the State Senate and the Assembly later this week. It'll go to the Joint Finance Committee today. In some breaking news, and this sounds like just a little thing, I think it's a big thing. From the New York Times, President Trump has just suggested he was open to pushing back the July 4th deadline he set for passage of his sprawling domestic policy bill in Congress. "I'd love to do July 4th, but I think it's very hard to do July 4th," he told reporters this morning on the South Lawn of the White House. Trump still said he wanted to pass the bill soon and that it would be, quote, "very wise for all Republicans to get on board." This is big, and here's why. The Senate clearly does not have the votes yet among the Republicans in the Senate. They can only afford to lose 3 votes. They've already lost 2 for sure, and they are not certain to get it all. So the horse trading is still going on, and yet there's this immense pressure to get done by July 4th. Why? Because the polling on this Trump bill, this Republican bill, is awful. I mean, it's off the charts bad, but only for people who find out about the bill, only for people who know what's in it. For people who don't, they just kind of take it as, well, I supported Trump and I support what he does. But that's not how this is working as people find out more about what is in this turkey, how badly it hurts people. It is underwater with people who, with 55% in the latest Quinnipiac poll of voters, 55% opposed the bill. 29% said they support it. 16% were unsure. Among Republicans, 2/3 said they support the act, 67%. Among Republicans, that's actually a very small number. You know, the same would be if it was Democrats for a Democratic bill. Because again, as people find out what's in this thing, it reminds me of the Affordable Care Act. Now, bear in mind, of course, the Affordable Care Act was the right thing to do. It should have been done right away, and it should have included a public option. But as the July 4th holiday drew closer in 2009, you had Democrats who were holdouts, some who did not think that the Affordable Care Act went far enough, others, like the late Joe Lieberman, who thought it went too far. And Senate Democrats didn't have a vote to spare, so they had to try hard to get every last person on board the Affordable Care Act. But it didn't happen by July 4th. And in August, there were all these, you know, town halls back home where members heard an earful about, you know, government-run health care and, you know, everybody's taking over my health care and I want to keep my health care. And Democrats were not doing a particularly good job of messaging the good things that were in the bill and the improvements to health care stability and affordability. Time was the enemy. This thing dragged on. It dragged on through the fall recess and wasn't passed until early 2010. And of course, later in 2010, Democrats were absolutely shellacked at the polls, present company included, losing my legislative seat. But we got it across the finish line. It's just that it would have been a lot easier if everybody had been singing from the same hymnal prior to that first 4th of July recess. And it didn't happen. And it almost doomed the bill, and it certainly doomed the fate of some of us who were supporting it. So President Trump and Republicans know that they want to get this thing passed quickly before more people find out what's in it, because it's the opposite of the Affordable Care Act. You know, the Affordable Care Act, a lot of folks weren't crazy about it, but the more they learned about it, the more they liked it instead of just listening to the talking points. Well, same thing here. If instead of listening to Trump and Republican talking points, people find out what's in it, they hate it more. And rightly so. It's terrible. And that's why Trump and others want to get this thing done by July 4th. So for Trump to suggest maybe it doesn't have to be done by July 4th anyway, it doesn't mean it's dead. But it means what he's hearing from Republican leaders in Congress is they're not there yet. They do not have the votes. And even if they find the votes in the U.S. Senate, this thing still has to go back to the U.S. House, where there are, again, some Republicans who are already infuriated that the Senate has made so many changes to their original bill. So there is no reason to be complacent here. There is every reason to be as alarmed as ever at what this could do, because this bill could still pass. And frankly, even if this bill doesn't pass, this whole episode should tell you all you need to know about your member of Congress. Even if this bill doesn't pass, you're going to know that you have a member of Congress that either would be happy to rip away your health care, would be happy to rip away nutrition assistance for hungry kids, would be happy to rip away all the investments that we've made to make taxes affordable to the middle class, and give it all away to the top tax brackets, and give you absolutely nothing. So even if this bill doesn't pass, if you're represented by somebody who's lying to you, saying that, you know, Medicaid won't be cut for those people who are truly deserving, you have all you need to maybe support somebody else next year. Or if you've got somebody who represents you, who has been standing shoulder to shoulder fighting against this turkey and pointing out how many people rely on Medicaid for stable, affordable health care coverage, well, that's a person that, you know, you want to stand shoulder to shoulder with them. They're the kind of folks who would have fought to get a public option into the Affordable Care Act were it not for Joe Lieberman, and I'm going to leave it at that. But we can always strengthen the good things like the Affordable Care Act, and we can always work to tear down things like this one big boondoggle of a bloated budget bill from Donald Trump. Dan Schaefer is coming up next. You're up north. Let's get right into it from the recombobulation area, one Dan Schaefer, because, well, Dan, this is what we train for. This is why we lift all those weights. Dan Hagen is out there right now roller skiing in the hot morning of July 1st because he wants to be ready for the Birkebeiner. And we do what we do all year long so we can be ready for days like this where there's all the details of a state budget agreement, even as Congress is going through the chaos of trying to pass their own federal budget. You know, sleep is for weenies, Dan Schaefer. Here we are, ready for a day like today. How are you?
I'm doing well. A little discombobulated this morning, but we're piecing things back together, and always wonderful to join you here on Mornings with Pat Wrightlow.
Always nice to have you here as well. So so we got the first word at 5 a.m. from the governor's office in a press release. The Associated Press and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel had plenty of details on the budget bill as well. We've been reading through them throughout the past 2.5 hours here. So before we go back into the details, for the time that you've had to look at it, what's your own 30,000-foot view of what they have created here? And will it be a case of good enough, or will it be a case of perfect is the enemy of the very good?
Well, you're right. There's a lot of information to parse here from Governor Evers' release this morning, talking about the deals of this bipartisan agreement. And I think one of my big takeaways from this is that I think they are going to require Democratic votes in the state Senate to pass the budget for the first time in, I don't know, more than 15 years now, right? And so... with that, with, as I reported last week on Civic Media, with State Senate Minority Leader Dianne Hesselbein being brought into negotiations, I think that changed the dynamic of the deal being struck in some pretty significant ways. We're seeing, you know, increases for special education reimbursement. We're seeing increases to the UW system, a number of other areas that are being addressed in the budget. And I don't know how much of that would have happened had they not reached a certain level of impasse, and that The Republicans needed some Democratic votes in order to pass the budget in the state Senate. And as we're seeing some of the initial reaction this morning, State Senator Jody Habersh-Sinikin, who represents northern Milwaukee County and a number of communities on the North Shore there, said this budget is not perfect, but it reflects both bipartisanship and progress, and I am proud to see it move forward. And then I'm continuing to quote the release here. What we are seeing play out in this budget is the consequence of Wisconsin's new fairer maps, legislators working together to find compromise and make meaningful progress for the people of Wisconsin. So I do think that is one of the big takeaways here, is that the smaller Republican margins in the state Senate that were achieved in part through the fair maps, in part through a number of tough electoral victories won last fall by people like Jody Habersh-Sinikin, who won in a really close race, a number of other state senators, Jamie Wall, Chris Alfheim, and go down the list there to kind of shrink the gap and make this a bill that had input from Senate Democrats, from Tony Evers, and then from legislative Republican leadership as well, and Robin Voss and Devin Lemahue. So we'll still, I'm sure there will be plenty of questions, there always are, on anything this big. But I think one of my initial big takeaways is that fair maps, tough elections, leading to a bipartisan compromise in the state Senate. And I think that's a pretty big deal.
Fair maps get you a fair budget. Not a great budget for anybody, but you get closer to the win-win. Here's the other example of a win-win. Usually I talk about it in terms of dollars and cents, but when you get to the raw politics, you get to marginalize some of your extremists, and you get to insulate some of your most vulnerable members. And here's what I mean. State Senator Chris Kapinga yesterday put out a social media post saying he'd be happy if it took months. He said, we got to get this right. He said, if it takes months, we're going to get it right. So it was clear that he and one or two other senators were not coming along on this. And so hence you need the Democratic votes. By doing it this way, you not only get a bipartisan vote on the budget, but you're actually going to get a couple of more Republicans, I think, who will vote no in order to say, yeah, it just wasn't good enough for me. And also, you'll get maybe a couple of Democrats in very competitive seats who, as they look at the lay of the land in their district, are going to want to go back and say, yeah, I did not vote for this because it, you know, spends too much or does or wasn't spending enough, depending on the district they're in. So I think you get a bipartisan vote. And I think you've got people at both ends of the left-right spectrum who now have the freedom to say no without looking like they're the obstacle to getting a deal done.
I think you're absolutely right about that. And I think there's some evidence of that as well. I just saw a statement come across the Twitter feed from State Senator Chris Larson of Milwaukee. He said, and I quote, Governor Evers and Republican leadership announced the tentative budget agreement today. There are some good things in it. And Wisconsin State Senator Dianne Hesselbein played a key role in making it better than it otherwise would have been. However, the final product falls far short of what our neighbors need and, frankly, what they have demanded since the beginning of this process. So perhaps there's one example of a Democratic senator who might not be all the way there just yet on this budget deal. And I think you're right. There is some raw politics at play here. But I think, again, the big picture of this is that we do have a budget agreement, and there seems to be support, at least some levels of support, and I guess some levels of opposition as well, from both sides of the aisle.
I don't think I could be happier right now, my inner nerd, that I make a political guess on something and I get affirmation of it from somebody's social media feed in the immediate aftermath of making that comment. So sometimes you shoot for the basket and the ball actually goes in. And
Nostradamus Kreitlow here. Yeah. Nostra Kreitlow something. I don't
something,
know.
Something along those lines. Now, I want to come back to something that Corrine Hendrickson told us in the last hour, and she has been fighting hard for child care counts. And what is going to result from this budget deal is not child care counts, but it is going to be state funding, and not insignificant state funding, but not as much as people were hoping for, into child care, not only provider payments, but also helping parents with lower incomes to afford child care. And to sum up her view, it was at first she was happy to see that there was funding. That was a big deal because Republicans wanted to put $0. But then she was somewhat crestfallen to see that the dollars that were there, according to her read on it, are there for 1 year and not the full 2-year budget cycle. And that is a level of the lack of stability is going to mean that some providers are just going to say, I can't keep riding this roller coaster. I got to go. And it is going to make, I think, some other Democrats wonder if this is something they can support if there isn't enough assistance for child care in this budget.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think the governor has really been out front on talking about child care as a major issue in this budget. I think there was it last week or week before that he said he would not sign a budget without some level of child care funding. I think because of the nature of compromise, the nature of divided government, we weren't probably going to get to about $450 million, something in the ballpark there, for child care funding that the governor initially proposed. I think the total number here, as outlined by the governor in this press release, says the state budget will invest over $330 million in the child care industry, but including $110 million in those direct payments. And I think beyond that, there are some specific programs, some assistance, subsidies and certain things like that. And we will have to, dig into the details. This is all pretty fresh here. But as far as that comparing to just the Child Care Accounts program, I think this is not quite going to be there. But again, I don't think Republicans were coming to the table with really anything on child care funding until they had to bring the Senate Democrats into the negotiations here. So, I guess nature of compromise, right? You're not going to get everything you want, but this is a whole lot better than what the state has ever put forward for child care in the past.
Yes, for child care and also for special education. Again, it's not nearly the special education reimbursement rate that voucher schools get, but you're now moving that needle to 42% reimbursement in the first year, 45% reimbursement in the second year. All told, $500 million of an increase in funding for K-12 special education programs. State employees, including those in the UW system, would get a 3% raise this year and a 2% raise next year. And there was all of this investment spelled out for the UW system, including what seems a little surprising to me, but there was a lot of enumeration, as they call it here, listing specific building projects at UWM, at UW-La Crosse, at UW-Stevens Point, and others. It almost felt like, Dan, they were like, look, let's just do as much as we possibly can while we have some agreement on this, because I don't see them getting back together anytime soon. It's going to be this or hit the bricks.
Yeah, and a lot of it, too, like what you said with the UW system, a lot of it is capital projects. So a lot of it is some one-time expenditures for some of those building projects you mentioned. So it's not necessarily the type of thing that Republicans would really balk at, which would be some sort of long-term long-term investment. Ugh, what a horrible thing that would be in the UW system. A lot of those, it's kind of one-time capital projects and things like that. I think that, kind of makes it a little bit more palatable to Republicans being able to pass this, because they wanted to make cuts to the UW system. And I think the way Governor Evers characterized it is in his press release announcing this deal, we called it stabilizing the UW system. So I don't think he, went as far as to say this is, some sort of long-term investment, but stabilization of the system is the way the governor characterized it.
We're talking to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, Civic Media political editor. Get his news at therecombobulationarea.news on Facebook from our friend Chris Hambuck-Boyle. We need some sufficient, like the voucher schools. Some certain gives us what is left, and we will not hit those reimbursement numbers. From Alicia, just from what I've learned so far, I think I would vote for this budget, even though it still shortchanges our schools and child care. There's also the part of the deal that one of the many things that Governor Evers proposed and Republicans took out, but now it's back in, and that is getting rid of the sales tax on household utility bills. That's going to lower out-of-pocket costs for to the tune of about $178 million over the next 2 years for Wisconsin households. This is like a page out of the Joe Biden playbook of, instead of these sweeping, grandiose things, find all these little ways that the middle class is getting nickeled and dimed and crow about taking care of some of those nickels and dimes.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think there's going to be a number of things like that. I think there's some transportation related funding throughout this bill that, again, to make a Joe Biden comparison, investing in infrastructure is always a good thing in Wisconsin, too. So I think there are, I'm searching for the number here, but several hundred million going towards some transportation projects and infrastructure projects as well.
Yeah, and we're still waiting to see details on that. All right, last thing in our final minute here is where it goes from here. Joint Finance will take it up today. And then I don't know if I've even seen if it goes Assembly first, then Senate, or Senate Assembly. But do we feel like they're actually going to bang it all out this week?
This could all happen very quickly over the next 72 hours or so here. I think the Joint Finance Committee, that we saw it get delayed and delayed and delayed over so many times in the process over the past few weeks. It wouldn't shock me to see more delays, but I think they want to act quickly on this. They want to get it done before the 4th of July weekend, so everybody serving in the legislature can go shoot off some fireworks and enjoy some summer travel or whatever it might be.
Unlike Congress, they are definitely meeting their July 4th deadline. Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, Civic Media's political editor, thank you very, very much. Have a great day, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
All right. A local update is coming next for some of you. Others will come back here, and I will talk to State Senator Jeff Smith from Eau Claire County and get his take on this bipartisan budget deal. Remember, you can follow my team at Up North News all day long, all through our newsletters, social media, and, of course, Up North News, WI.com, and here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
The Milwaukee Brewers are back in action tonight, tomorrow night, and Thursday night against the New York Mets out there in Queens. 5:35 is when the pregame begins on Civic Media stations in Richland Center and Oshkosh and Racine Kenosha and Park Falls and Hayward. Don't forget, you can sign up for our newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. And that's a 7-day-a-week thing now, the newsletters, a sports newsletter on Saturdays. My politics newsletter is on Sundays. And we'd love to have you be a subscriber to all of those things. Dan Schaefer continues with us, and I'm going to send a quick note over to Senator Jeff Smith so that he can join us. And so, Dan, let me ask you just to weigh in a little bit more on, I mean, there are things that we still don't know. I'd still put the odds of passage at real good, but I guess just to fill people in on the process, as this goes to the Assembly and the Senate, there is still a process of taking amendments, and so theoretically, there are ways that this can be modified, and frankly, in ways that Governor Evers could still veto. He promised not to veto things that were in this deal, but that doesn't mean there aren't other things that he couldn't veto.
Yeah, we're going to have to see as this process unfolds, as the rubber meets the road here in the Joint Finance Committee today and in floor sessions for the Senate and Assembly later this week. But I think, you know, just taking a step back and looking at the kind of timeline of how this came together, you know, we've been hearing about this impasse that they've been having with Republican leadership and the governor and trying to strike a deal, a lot of back and forth and negotiations and all that. And then last Friday, I got word that State Senate Minority Leader, Democratic Minority Leader Dianne Hasselbein had been invited into the negotiations. And I think that was Republicans finally understanding that they didn't have 17 votes in the state Senate, the votes that they would have needed to pass the budget with only Republican votes. So they needed the Democrats, at least some of the Democrats in the state Senate, Dianne Hasselbein and others who might be supporting this deal. We heard some release this morning from Democratic State Senator Jody Habersh-Sinikin supporting this budget agreement in principle as well. And you're right, we could see some further modifications, but I think the big picture here that came together because of the inclusion of state Senate Democrats in these negotiations that were able to strike this this bipartisan compromise, as they're calling it, does seem especially significant.
I guess it just still stands out to me that in the Republicans in the Senate caucus and Republicans like Ron Johnson in the Senate Republican Caucus in Washington, D.C., that they are still clinging so hard onto the belief that the only way they can succeed is to have this tremendous slashing of things like Medicaid at the federal level or the UW system at the state level. And I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised necessarily, but in both cases, the folks on the far right fiscally have probably done more to extend these budget processes than anything else. And that's just not in the mainstream of where Wisconsin and American values are in terms of the things they want to support. You had a great post last week looking at the Marquette poll and pointing out that, you know, there are all these things with more than two-thirds support, and you know where to find them. On which side of the spectrum?
They're coming from Democrats. These proposals are coming from Democrats, these especially popular ones that were in the Marquette poll, the stuff that most Wisconsinites agree on, the two-thirds things that Wisconsinites agree on. They were, by and large, things supported by Democrats in that Marquette poll.
All right. Well, let's bring in Senator Jeff Smith now from the Eau Claire County town of Brunswick, joining us here from what appears to be your Capitol office, Senator.
That's right, Pat. And, hey, you know, Dan, thanks for saying that. Good ideas are coming from Democrats. We take a lot of beating these days that we're not fighting back, but considering we aren't in control, the best thing we can do is keep reminding them of what the public really wants.
All right. Well, let's get the 3-minute version of what you think. When did you find out most of the points, and what's your general view of the whole schmear?
Well, we've been getting breadcrumbs, tidbits through the last weekend and through yesterday. And we're going to find out. We haven't yet to see the whole budget. So to tell you the truth, after all these years of lack of trust, I have to see the whole budget to know what's real and what's not. There have been concessions made, or I should say compromises made, you know, and there will be votes coming from Democrats to bail out the Republicans and get this done, because after all, we've got to make sure that we get that hospital funding that is being held over our head by the feds. This has to get done in a timely fashion. Unfortunately, that timely fashion has really passed, and the Republicans have really manipulated this whole system to put us in a bad spot where we have 24 hours to look at a 900-page document and then vote on it.
It's a very good point. And then on top of that, you've got the state Supreme Court ruling on light item vetoes last week that, as I explained last week, has me concerned that the Joint Finance Committee, the Republicans there, can just put immense amounts of cash in their so-called supplemental fund and then micromanage the dollars as they see fit. But until you see the whole bill, you have no idea if there's going to be that funding for Chippewa Valley Healthcare to make up for the hospitals. That is still to be seen one way or the other?
Thanks for bringing that up, because that supplemental funding, we're supposed to trust them at this point that they will release monies for these important pieces like that. I don't trust them anymore. They've proven themselves to not care and not be willing to release funding when it's needed. So this is a bad way of governing. They obviously can't govern, don't know how to govern, and I'm just telling them, get out of the way, because some of us do know and do care.
And then just a couple of seconds here, Dan Schaefer mentioned it. I just want your quick affirmation on this. Fair maps is what got us a more fair budget. Not a great budget, but a fair budget because of fair maps. Yes or no?
It's competitive maps, and yes, it did.
Okay. Senator Jeff Smith from the Eau Claire County town of Brunswick. Thank you, my friend. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area. Thank you as well. Appreciate you sticking around.
Thanks so much, Pat. Be well.
All right. And thanks to all of you for being part of our program this morning. I'm Pat Kreitlow, founding editor of Up North News, part of Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news network. Find us at upnorthnewswi.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. Up North.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.